Blog Talk Radio.
The Real Sports Guys Talk Radio, where real guys talk real sports. You're in the building with D. Wills, Marcus the Great, and Ray the Legend. We're about to hit it again. This is the probably the best time of the year. We got college football kicking off. We got the NFL. NBA is around the corner. Baseball is heating up. Hell, even people thinking about hockey. This is a good time, but we're not going to talk about any of that. College football weekend is really all there is to talk about. Boise State, are they deserving? Fellas, we're just going to start with that. Is Boise State, are they deserving? What do you think about their performance last night? Let me hear from you.
Well, I saw the game. I watched the majority of the game. I probably missed 5 minutes of it, flipping through the channels here and there. But Boise State's the real deal. I mean, they're the real deal. They pounded the ball at Virginia Tech. I mean, just gashing them on run plays. You know, a lot of people think of Boise State and they think of the gadget play they had against Oklahoma. They think of, special teams plays and, fake punts and Statue of Liberty plays and that kind of stuff. But this was just straight up run it down your throat football. This was big boy football, and they brought it to Virginia Tech. And, the quarterback and the rest of the team, they came through in the clutch and pulled that game out, and it was a great game to watch. I mean, that was a great showcase game for Boise State. And it'll be interesting to see how everything plays out because, their strength of schedule is still going to, even though they're starting the season number three, if they go undefeated starting the season at number three and they still can't get to the national championship game, then the system is just flawed. Because there's no way a mid-major can get to the title game. If Boise State runs the table and they don't get to the title game this year, then the BCS is just flawed. This is the come to Jesus moment for the BCS. It's either inherently flawed or it can work.
So if you have, let's say, undefeated Ohio State and a one-loss Alabama, and then you have Boise State, who's it going to be?
It's going to be an undefeated Ohio State and a one-loss Alabama.
I mean, but is that right?
Is that right?
I mean, you can make an argument that those are still the two best teams, even though Boise State
goes undefeated. Yeah, it's right. It's right. And it's always going to be right.
Yeah.
So there's no way for Boise State to break through. That's what's inherently wrong with the system. Like, there's no way for Boise State to break through because if Alabama comes in with one loss but they still win the SEC, they need to be in the championship.
I heard an argument today about Boise, which was an interesting argument about Boise State in terms of, thinking about them. They're a great team, but they're like and I think the person used a boxing analogy. They're like a boxer that is at a certain weight, but they can go up in weight and win a fight. But they could consistently win at that weight. So it's kind of like they're like Roy Jones. Like Roy Jones can go up and win the heavyweight title, but could Roy consistently fight at the heavyweight level? And most people would say, nah. But he could go up for one night, he could fight, he'd come back down and might train again and come up another fight. And I thought that was an interesting analogy to kind of put Boise State in that, it's a great, great team. But, could they go up there and be heavyweights every night? Could they be in the SEC or the Big Ten or some of these leagues and be the favorite? every weekend. And I think that's the argument that people place with Boise State in terms of, you know, whether or not they're deserving of a chance for a national title, if it's tight, you know, if you got a one-loss SEC team or undefeated Ohio State, you know, I think that's what people talk about.
Well, that's what's going to happen with Boise State, and they would have to go undefeated, and you know, if Alabama were to suffer a second loss, now you've got an argument. But that's always going to be the argument, is that Boise State doesn't play in a conference of that caliber. You know, and that's what football, you know, it's hard to go undefeated. You know, and I still think, you know, when you get an undefeated team in the Big Ten, they have to play in a national championship game.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
I mean, that's all you can talk about. Boise State can go undefeated this year and last year and find themselves in the top five. But when it comes down to the end of the year and they start putting that BCS Bowl series together, they still don't have the strength of schedule to be talked about in the same, you know, caliber and league. You know, they're a great football team, and they do everything at every level the way that you'd like to see a team play. But, again, you know, these stronger conferences, you know, they don't expect to go undefeated. You know, I don't think anybody in the Big Ten expects to go undefeated this year. And as they expand, you know, next year, it's even tougher.
Uh-huh.
And that's where Boise State is going to find themselves.
And Ray, what I would say is, having said that, when they got the ball, I knew they were going to score. Having said all of that, when they got the ball, I was like, Kellen Moore is going to take them down and they're going to score. And if you can see it, you know.
I had the same feeling. I was like, they're
going to
score.
Yeah.
Sure, but would you have that same feeling if that game would have been, if they would have been playing Ohio State?
I probably would have had that feeling. There's something about
the way that game was going, I would have. Because they went out there and they played. They didn't back down. They looked like they belonged. You know,
sure.
They look like
and they do belong. That's the sad thing about it, is that they do belong. What they have to do is figure out how they can prepare their schedule to play within the conference that they have, and try to talk some of these teams into taking the chance. Because, you know, West Virginia, if they would have won, you know, where would they have found themselves in the ranking after beating Boise State?
Yeah.
You know, they wouldn't have gone up as high had they beaten Ohio State, or had they beaten Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they would have beat Boise State, they would have gone up in the rankings, but it wouldn't have boosted their – and you had to find those conference teams in those conferences that would take that chance.
And that's the problem.
The other thing that could happen, and I think with all this shifting and realignment, is, you know, you may see some of these kind of mid-level, you know, non-automatic qualifying conferences, some of these teams like a Boise State, a TCU, you know, a Houston, you know, BYU. Well, BYU is going independent, but some of these schools just say, you know what, F it. Let's all get together and be our own conference, and we'll play each other.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
We'll play each other,
talk about
and we'll give ourselves a shot. One of us is going to get through.
You know, we used to talk about the Big Ten and how, you know, when they would find themselves without an undefeated team, you know, not playing for that national championship. And I used to always say, you know, that's, you know, you look, you know, Wisconsin plays UNLV, you know, they don't play anybody in the first half of their conference or in their schedule, those first few games. And where they should have been trying to, you know, hook that game up with Miami and hook that game up with Notre Dame and hook that game up with Alabama, with Texas, and play those early games as if they were more conference games.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of these football teams wants to see what they have and get a win.
Mm-hmm. You can almost make an argument for Boise State that maybe they should think about being independent. I mean, you almost can make an argument for it if they can construct their schedule, if they can add a few more games to their schedule. You know, if
right.
they can continue to play some of those teams that are in their current conference and maybe add, because they're going to play Oregon State, which is, you know, if they stay where they are, is another good team, they beat Oregon State. you know, that'll add a little bit to it. But if they could play maybe one or two more. They don't need to play that many more teams. They could play one or two. Don't try to build a schedule like the SEC. But if they play one or two more teams in that schedule and kept some of those other teams who are on their schedule, I mean, they got a good recruiting base. They've been doing it for years, easily for the past 10 years. So it's like they already have a name. They're tapped into their recruiting base. You know, that might be something for them to think about, that, you know, maybe they should think about doing being independent and constructing their schedule in a little different way, even if that means they're playing somebody from the ACC in the middle of the pack, the ACC.
Right.
You know, that's still, or if they end up playing Minnesota or whatever, that's still a little better
schedule.
And the
same
schedule
people
that
Ohio State play.
And the same people that Ohio State play.
You know, the same people that University of Miami is going to play.
That's right.
You know, what happens with these conferences, though, is that they're only going to give you those first couple games.
Yeah. Right.
And then they're going right into their conference schedule. They don't want to see you in November. They don't want to see you, you know, in late October. They only want to see you, you know, in middle of August, you know, the end of August. Or early September. So, you know, to try to go independent, you know, who are you going to play? Who are you going to get to play, you know, the last eight games of your schedule?
And it might not be that. If they play, you know, up in the front end half, maybe a couple, they could probably find somebody later in the year, particularly with the way these conferences are reshuffling their –
sure.
They're, you know, it's like, you know, Wisconsin goes out and plays Hawaii late in the year. You know,
right.
It's, you know, so they're, you know, if you make the money right, you know, particularly
there
with
again,
the kind of, I
there
think
again, Wisconsin will go to Hawaii because they'll load up a few planes. Hawaii welcomes them. They pack a stadium. You know,
right.
People
get that's a good trip for the alum.
Yeah.
But you're going to have a hard time to talk them into, you know, going to Boise. I know.
Well, that later year, Boise's got to go on the road. You know,
and there you go, and that might be exactly what you want to do. You know, that might be exactly what you have to do.
Yeah, they're going to be like Detroit Catholic Central. We don't have a home field. We'll go wherever you want us to play.
Exactly, and don't think that they wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't fit right into Michigan and set it up.
Mm-hmm.
It's Boise State. It's a good football game. You know, would you rather go see Michigan play Indiana, or would you rather see Michigan play Boise State? There's your mid-season game. You know, the other part of that, and I think that, we talked about earlier, is that coaching staff. And how long will that coaching staff stay at Boise if they don't get a chance for a national championship? Because somebody has to be in that ear going, you know, you should be playing for a title.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, when Northwestern was winning ball games, you know, all of a sudden – you know, their coach was the hottest ticket in town. He left.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now Northwestern is back to being Northwestern.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm afraid that will happen to Boise State.
Yeah.
They don't figure out how to play for a national championship. That coach, you know, everybody in town knows that coaching staff. And so, you got to wonder, you know, how they're going to keep him if they can't get him into those bigger venues.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that they, you know, and he, the coaching staff has been resisting it, you know, but I think it's going to be, you know, like I said, this is going to be the test because I got a feeling, you know, they're highly motivated. You know, they got one big bump right now on their schedule coming up in a couple weeks against Oregon State, you know, they're highly motivated. So they're going to test the system. You know, they got a veteran team, and I think they're going to test the system.
Well, that's the whole thing about Boise State is that they'll always have a veteran team. Those guys aren't leaving early, you know, and on every level they've got good coaching. You know, they have good special teams. They have good defense. They play great offense. And even, you know, the teams that pull off trick plays are those teams that are well coached.
Yeah.
You know, so if they want to run a statue, but they can do whatever they want to. It's showing out, you know. They'll beat you any way they want to beat you.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get down, you know, the BCS is all about numbers. Strength of schedule, numbers, who they played, how many points they've scored. And Boise State's schedule is not going to give them the weight to play in a national championship if the two teams above them, and again, those two teams above them can change quickly. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's unlikely that Ohio State drops and a team like Wisconsin goes undefeated and Boise State, you know, somehow surpasses that Big Ten team. That's the problem that I see. If there's an undefeated team in the Big Ten, if there's an undefeated team in the ACC, if there's an undefeated team in the Pac-10, they're going to be ahead of Boise State.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, you can count on that. And this is going to make for an interesting discussion for the, you know, for the rest of the season, you know, and that's one of the things, you know, they're going to be, you know, in the discussion every week.
You know, and all they can hope for is to go undefeated and go back to the White House. Because they're going to get to play for a national championship. that's what's wrong with the whole bowl series altogether.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And until they finish with the realignment and get to a true playoff, you know, that's when, you know, if they can keep that coaching staff in Boise State, we have to see a national playoff in the next 5 years. We have to. The way that these conferences are splitting up and dividing and getting bigger, it's just a matter of time. And when they take 10 teams and put them in a playoff, Boise State has to be in there. You can't take the top 11 teams or the top 12 teams or just take the top, you know, teams and then just exclude them. And then they'll play it out.
Yeah.
That's when they'll get their national title.
So who are some of the other teams that you saw this weekend who, you know, as you start to think about this hunt for the national championship in practice?
Well, I don't know if they're in the hunt for the national title, but Michigan looks like they're about a year away from being back.
Yeah.
The boy, Denard Robinson, looked good.
Clown him.
He looked good in that Rich Rodriguez's system. I mean, it looked like Rodriguez finally got some players that fit with what he was trying to do, because before it was like he was trying to teach those boys Chinese arithmetic. Because them guys he had in there before was just like, man, you want me to what?
You want me to practice?
You want me to practice? You want me to go out here and I'm a drop back quarterback. You want me to run the option?
Yep.
You want me to run a spread? What is your problem? You're at the wrong school for that. But I think he finally got some boys in there who could do what he wanted to do, because that kid, I mean, he looked good. He looked good. And this Michigan-Notre Dame game coming up is going to mean something for once. You know, in the last couple of years, it hasn't really meant a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this game finally has some weight to it again. But, yeah, it looked like he's about a year. I still think they're real young, but I think they're about a year away from making some noise in the Big Ten, which would be good, because when Michigan is good, the Big Ten is good,
mm-hmm.
and you know, all is right in the world.
The kid I saw play, I was just getting some information up, is Jossie Kreiner from Arizona. This kid is a receiver for Arizona. He had 11 receptions for 187 yards. He went clowning on him. This kid looks like he's going to be something special. He's an interesting guy, big receiver. You know, I was watching, I was like, this cat is just clowning. You know, I know they're playing Toledo, but that's one of those mid-majors that sometimes trip you up. But this is a kid you got to watch from Arizona. If you get a chance to watch him play, he caught a ridiculous circus catch. It was like he was falling to the ground and fell on his chest. But he had 187. It's going to be interesting to see how he plays once they get to the Pac-10. Arizona, I mean, I think what they're doing there, I mean, this is going to be a year to make whether or not Stoops gets them over the top or not, and what's going to happen with him as a coach. But he's one of the performers, you know, that I saw. I was like, let me make a note of this, because this is a kid that I want to see play more. So if you ever get a chance to watch Arizona play, watch this kid. You know, he had, like I said, 187 yards receiving, and he was clowning on him.
Yeah,
I don't see Arizona doing much, but he's a player I see that is going to be excited.
Did you have a chance to watch any of the Wisconsin game?
Yeah, I watched that. They kept turning the dang ball over.
They did.
Making mistakes, and you know, that was one that killed me. But the defense was looking better than I thought it would go. The defense was good.
I looked at that offensive line, and that offensive line has to be, if not one, the best offensive line. I can't get over how you know, they made a lot of mistakes, and they had so much time to make those mistakes.
That's right.
Some of those errant passes were, you know, they were truly errant passes.
The quarterback with so much time to F up.
Right, and the holes that they've opened up for those running backs.
Yeah.
When if they put something together, you know, they could be a tough team to beat. They're incredible. They're incredible. When you have a good offensive line, it makes all the difference in the world. And they did make a lot of mistakes. And it was, you know, it is early in the season, and they were pretty hyped to be in, you know, Las Vegas, but that offensive line played really well.
Yeah, and Brett will correct that. I was just wondering about this because the tease then was the defense, coming out and playing well and establishing themselves. And I think they did a really good job defensively for the most part. They got the players. That offense could score a lot of points. And that's the thing. They should put points on the board this year because that's the veteran part of their team, you know, because of that offensive line. And Clay and those cats coming back, Tim holding on the ball a little bit, but he's a great receiver. I think they look at it, they've got to take care of that ball.
And that, you know, when you talk about a Michigan, you know, that it's that type of offensive line that can chew up the clock to keep that Michigan offense off the field.
Yeah.
You know, going back to that Michigan game, that young man, you know, that they had behind the ball or behind center now, the one thing that I watched when I did see that game that I did see was that he was one of those winners. You know, he looked like he can beat you in 101 ways.
And, did you see Tate on the sidelines sitting off by himself, not in with the team? You know, and I got some folks on the ground there who, you know, he's been hanging out a little bit. He hasn't been living up to his responsibilities with the team.
Who is that?
Tate, what's the quarterback of last year? Who was the starting quarterback? Yeah, for Michigan.
Fourcier.
So, I mean, he's, you know, got some feet on the ground and, you know, some people, I mean, he hasn't been living up to and he had a head start. I mean, he came in December, and Denard didn't come until August. So, I mean, Denard had a lot to learn last year, but he just hasn't been, from what I'm hearing, living up to his responsibility. Then he's sitting off on the sidelines, everybody else is. So it's going to be interesting to see how Rod deals with that situation. My sense is he's going to transfer at the end of the year.
Oh, yeah, he's going to transfer. He comes from a spoiled family. His brother was like that. I think he was at UCLA.
Yeah.
And, you know, he didn't get the job there, so he bucked.
Yeah.
And, you know, he went out as a blaze of idiocy.
Yeah. So, you might see that, you know, watch that storyline. But Rod seems like he has it together. You know, Ohio State is still the, you know, the team to beat in the Big Ten. And we'll see how they act this weekend. The Big Ten looks better than it has in years, which is
yeah.
How did you like the divisions? You know, now that they announced the divisions, how do you feel about that? Ohio State and Michigan not in the same division. Wisconsin and Minnesota not in the same division. You know,
they still gonna make room for those teams to play each other. You know, I feel like for football, it works for football. What struck me is that it can only work for football. You know, I texted Devon this the day it came out. I looked at it, and I was like, this can only work for football. This is the only purpose it serves for football. They can't use this division format in any other sport, and especially not basketball. But if you look at the alignment for basketball, you got Wisconsin, Ohio State, Purdue, Indiana, Illinois all on one side, and Michigan State sitting over there by the fence with a bunch of bums. So it only works for football. And for football, it's fair. I mean, it's fair. They still can make room for the crossover rivalry games.
When we were talking about undefeated in the Big Ten, you know, if you don't have Michigan playing Ohio State, you know, if you don't have, I mean, it's, you know, whenever Wisconsin's been ranked, you know, at the end of the year, it's because they've beaten Michigan or Ohio State or both of them. And when you don't get a chance, if these divisions don't play out where you don't get a chance to play those teams, then you're going to have a situation where you could have an undefeated Big Ten team and not get that championship game.
Yeah, and the interesting thing, you know, because if it's a divisional structure, like it's about Michigan playing Ohio State, let's say they're both undefeated, they could see each other again in the Big Ten championship.
Well,
they could play the last game of the year, then play again in a championship. If you look at it, because they're in opposite division, so you know, kind of like they did a few years ago, you could create a scenario like that where people could play each other twice within, you know, a week or 2 week period.
Right.
You know, so we'll see how that. You know, I think that's a long ways off. Michigan still has some work to do, but you know, I like it. I know the folks in Wisconsin weren't happy because of the Minnesota and Iowa not being in the division, and some other folks, I think around the league weren't very happy. But I think in the end, it's going to be good. You know, just having Nebraska come in is going to be good for the Big Ten.
And I think that the division split for Nebraska is going to help their recruiting.
Yeah.
It's going to help them an awful lot as if they need it. You know, I think that strengthened Nebraska in their program by putting them in that division.
Yeah.
I think it's going to help them quite a bit.
And it's going to help Wisconsin, too. I think it's going to help Wisconsin, too, because they get to put now they got Ohio State, you know, on their side. And if they beat Ohio State, that's going to give them a great shot at finally getting a shot at a national championship, because Wisconsin has been one of those schools that is kind of at the doorstep. But they haven't really got to that elite status yet because they haven't been able to kind of strike while the iron's hot in the right season.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think it works out. I think it'll work out well for them. You know, Iowa, some of these teams who have kind of been right there, but with Ohio State and when Michigan was good or Penn State, it was hard to break through. You're right. They're going to have a chance to get back up in there. And if you want to join the conversation, call 347-989-0844, 347-989-0844. I want to invite you around the table, so feel free to call in and join us here in the last half hour of the show. You know, as we look at the SEC, you know, obviously Alabama is good. I think Florida dropped in the rankings. They won and then dropped in the rankings. But, you know, everybody wants to talk about the SEC. You know, what do y'all think about them again? And, you know, my argument, I think it's overhyped. I got my little theory about the SEC, but I don't want to say that. But it's I feel like sometimes they overhyped, but, you know, that's the way it goes sometimes. You know, when I tell people that the Big Ten has a winning record against the SEC over the past 20 years, people are shocked. If you don't believe me, Google it. So, what do y'all think about that?
That's kind of deceiving because, you know, usually if it's a Big Ten play-in, you know, it's usually later in the year. So, if you could ever catch them up, you know, in the early part of the year, it might be different. But you know, the SEC is tough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they play more pro-style offenses. They play a more spread game. Their quarterbacks seem to be a little more traditional quarterbacks. They drop back and pass. They play a crazy game. We're up here in the cold. You know, we're used to, you know, hard knocks football, and you know, it's just a different flavor.
Yeah, I mean, the SEC is predicated on speed. If you got a slow team in that conference, you will not survive. You know, if you ain't got at least half your roster running a 4-5 or under, good luck.
You know, and that's, you know, Wisconsin, you know, you again, go back to Wisconsin. They have a great offensive line. You know, them are some big plowboys. They just run. You know, they like to run the football.
Yeah, but I think Wisconsin got a winning record against the SEC in the past, 10 years, don't they?
Yeah. Sure. And right now, other than LSU, Florida, and Alabama, everybody else is down right now.
Yeah, I think the only team that's the only team that has a losing record against FCS, I have to look at it again. I think of the major teams, I think is Ohio State. I mean, Michigan's got a winning record against the SEC. Penn State, I think when I looked at it, but I think the only team that stood out was Ohio State, and that's what everybody looks at because Ohio State was in those national championship games and didn't show well. And the Big Ten used to have the play. It's funny how they flip-flop because Big Ten, all the things, Ray, you described in terms of offense and type, pro style, that was the
right.
Big Ten.
That was the Big Ten.
And folks just kind of left it on the doorstep with it. But I think, you know, again, having said that, Alabama is going to be nothing nice.
Yeah.
That's all I just said.
And what sets them apart, though, is their defense. They got some criminals on defense. they might not bring
it. I said Alabama, not Miami.
No. I'm just saying, you know, some of that stuff is just assault. You know, they just hit.
Yeah.
It changes the game. I mean, it ain't you aren't getting tackled, you're getting mauled.
Mm-hmm.
They come at you, they swarm, they hit you.
Hey, gentlemen, I think we got a caller coming in here. Hold on a second. All right, who we got here on the air? Welcome to the Real Sports Guys.
What's going on, Sports Guys? This is Maurice calling in.
What's up, man?
What's up, Mo?
How you guys
Lockford
doing?
In the house. Welcome. What's on your mind, man?
I'll just listen to the show tonight. Thought I'd give a dial in. Hear you guys recap college football a little bit. And, you know, it was, after the draft, I've been thinking about the pro game, too. So, you know, football season's definitely in the air right now. So thought I'd give a call in.
Getting into that.
Oh, you helped us transition, man. Thank you, Mo.
Yeah.
Into the fantasy draft. So, Mo, who are some of the highlights in your drafts? You know, you just hit it. Who are some of the sleepers for those fantasy football folks out there?
Fantasy football wise, I'm still looking over my team right now, trying to figure out what I'm going to do with it. I got a couple. I'm in a couple of leagues right now, so. Everybody feels like you had a pretty good draft go around this round, but feeling good though. I think it's gonna be an interesting year, you know, fantasy wise and kind of in the real game wise. In terms of, I think we saw in our draft, I went a little bit different with taking a quarterback pretty early, and I think it's gonna be a different year for running
pretty
back.
Early.
Very early.
Pretty early. I think we had five running backs going, or five quarterbacks going the first 10 picks.
Yeah, man. I close the decision.
Four or five.
But I think things are changing, though. You look at the numbers, and you start looking at the numbers at the end of the year. Fantasy points, you know, quarterbacks are putting up a lot more points than running backs. And in a lot of situations, the running backs now are so much more, dual running backs. You don't have one guy carrying the load anymore. You got a lot of committee running backs, so... I think it is a change in how things are going to play themselves out.
But I agree. I've noticed that too.
But in years past, everybody realized that you needed those running backs because of the consistent play. And, every year that you've ever played fantasy football, you know, your quarterback scored more points than anybody on your team, or on anybody's team, actually. You might have two running backs that score in the top six. But now that's changed. Now you've got four or five quarterbacks, scoring in the top six. Running backs, you still have to have them, but they just don't hold. Usually they don't hold up, and they're not scoring. The way that the passing game is going now, how many years ago could you remember a 4,000 yard quarterback? You talk about Peyton Manning. Or, maybe Brady.
I mean, they were like 6-7 last year.
Yeah.
Count 1-2 for 3,800 yards.
Right. They were lighting it up. And the way that the passing game is going now, even with the 3-2 defense and the 3-4 defense, you know, that hasn't stopped the passing game. That hasn't stopped the passing game at all.
And see, with the quarterback situation, I mean, you got about 7 elite quarterbacks who are really, really better than everybody else after them. And if you don't get one of those dudes, your team is at a disadvantage. And with running backs, it's like, if you don't get one of the top 3 guys, if you didn't get Chris Johnson, if you didn't get Adrian Peterson or Ray Rice or Maurice Jones-Drew, then at that point, it's like, I better get a stud quarterback or a stud receiver because I'm not getting a stud running back because everybody after that has got a huge question mark.
And I had the first pick, and I took Chris Johnson. And by the time that I got a chance to get a quality quarterback, you know, and I don't really necessarily call Brett Favre a quality quarterback. I took Favre with the idea that I got to take another quarterback to play, you know, just as much. So I took Donovan McNabb.
Yeah.
So you can bet that when I put my lineup out there, it's going to be based, and I hate doing that. I never used to like doing that. But I think that's
changing. Think about that, though. You know, two or three years ago, Donovan McNabb was the third, fourth quarterback coming off the board. His production hasn't gone down. Hasn't gone down. There are more quarterbacks who have stepped their game up and are playing at a really, really high level. Because Donovan's numbers haven't fallen off.
I'm not afraid to go into the fantasy season with Favre McNabb as my quarterback. It's just that I don't have a number one and number two. It's going to come down to, you know, who they might be playing and who I think they might be able to exploit that week. Not like an Aaron Rodgers who you just expect to exploit everybody. Not like a Breeze who you expect to exploit everybody. You know where the offense is coming on those teams.
That's the beauty, I think, of the fantasy draft is that you can mix and match a little bit. So a lot of times I think we get, you know, kind of caught up in the hype of the big names and everybody wants to have that stud. You know, if you want to get that Chris Johnson or Adrian Peterson, who you know is kind of put in there week in and week out. But there are a lot of guys, again, it's not that a step far, a step back. You know, like McNabb didn't get a lot of hype in the last couple of years with Brady and Manning and Breeze. But, you know, again, you look at the numbers, he wasn't that far off the pace, you know. I mean, he wasn't, you know, probably super weeks, but he had very steady weeks most weeks, and he wasn't, you know, lighting the world on fire like in terms of having the big numbers, but still very productive and, you know, definitely can get you where you want to go.
The other thing that has happened, though, too, is that stud running back isn't the stud running back like you were used to. You know, you were used to a Marshall Faulk. You were used to a LaDainian Thomas. These cats would run for 1,500 yards and 18 touchdowns, and then they'd catch another 700 yards another 6 touchdowns. Priest Holmes, how many touchdowns did he score that year? 27? You know?
Yeah.
And so you don't have that anymore. You know, even with a Chris Johnson, you can expect him to come off the field at some point. You know, and it might be, you know, third and six. And all of a sudden he's off the field.
What happened was fantasy football got popular during an era that was running back heavy. I mean, you had a Priest Holmes, you had a Marshall Faulk, you had Sean Alexander, you had LT, and these all were dudes who was playing at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they included Edgerrin James, Clinton Portis in his prime. You know, you had an era of running backs like we now have an era of quarterbacks.
Right.
You know, and we've transitioned from an era where the league was super running back heavy and tons of good running backs and tons of running teams, where now you have teams who are throwing the ball more, running backs are sharing more carries.
Is it truly the quarterbacks have gotten better, or have these offenses changed so dramatically that, you know, you didn't see the type of spread offenses that, you know, during those eras, because that's the way they scored their points. You had LaDainian Tomlinson, so he either ran the ball or you just threw him the ball. He had 100 catches 1 year. I mean,
I think it's a function of two things. You do have more teams spreading things out, and I think part of that is because you have more teams going to the 3-4 defense.
Right.
And because the 3-4 defense is geared to stop the run and geared to shut down the run by occupying blockers with three big linemen and quick back linebackers, now you have teams. The best way to beat the 3-4 is to spread them out and throw underneath routes. And that's what you have more teams doing because they're seeing more 3-4s. And so the quarterbacking is better, slightly better, because you do have some legitimate quarterbacks who in any era would probably be good quarterbacks. But now they have more opportunity to put up numbers because of the type of schemes that they're seeing defensively, and that's forcing offenses to pass more. Because we just came out of that running back heavy era, teams started to shift to that 3-4 to stop running backs. Now you're seeing offenses respond by quarterback with more spreading teams out. You're seeing more teams where, you know, we had, in the, speaking from a fantasy perspective, we had third and fourth wide receivers get drafted because they're going to get the ball.
Right.
You know what I mean? We had like five Colts receivers got picked. You know what I mean? If you count Dallas Clark, I mean, you got five guys from one team who are draftable as far as catching passes.
That's where I see Devine coming about the value. I mean, you can't honestly sleepers anymore, but there's a lot of guys, obviously, who have kind of been switching teams and such who are big names who, I don't know if you really call them sleepers because of their name value, but, you know, you got, you know, T.O. and you got, you know, names of, like, players who got drafted pretty late in our draft, and I'm imagining probably in other drafts as well that were kind of names that probably, you know, are going to be, you know, second receivers, maybe third receivers of guys who are going to be probably having some pretty good big years. I can't believe, like, you know, Derek Mason and, you know, some of the guys who went really late in our drafts and some of the names that are probably going to be some primary targets. You know, Santonio Holmes, you know, who, even though he's got a suspension for the first four games, obviously he had a pretty huge year with Pittsburgh, you know, and but he went, you know, kind of later. So it's a lot of big names out there who are probably going to be those Hushmanzadeh, again, you know, coming over late now, so the draft, you know, get cut. So it's going to be a lot of names who everybody knows about, but, you know, they're going to be kind of late-round picks who are probably going to have some pretty decent years.
I got some sleepers, man.
I don't know if I'd have drafted Hushmanzadeh, but if I would have known he was going to be lining up across from Bolden, I might have looked at Flacco a little bit differently.
Yeah. Or even Bolden a bit differently. You would look at Bolden a bit differently, knowing that he was going to have a real option on there. I mean, Derek Mason's a solid receiver, but they still going to roll that safety over to Bolden side.
That's right.
You know, with Hushmanzadeh, you know, they may give him a little bit more. They may have to play both of those guys straight up a little bit more. Not that Hushmanzadeh is a burner, but he's a legitimate receiver.
But again, and if they run a three receiver set, if they don't bring in a short slot back, you know, a short slot guy, you know, those three receivers on the field at the same time just cost you, you know, it just causes headaches. But Flacco is the one that's going to be, you know, benefiting from that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if Flacco is the greatest quarterback, but it's kind of the same situation Palmer finds himself in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Palmer has never been, I thought he would be a better quarterback than he's turned out to be. And I'm not saying he's a terrible quarterback, but now he's sitting like, you know, like the butcher's dog, just grinning, just smiling it up. He should have his best year. He has never had a receiving core like this. He's had a lot of young guys, a lot of young talent, but these are guys that are going to catch the ball and do something with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you know, while he's always had decent talent around, Hushmanzadeh and Chad, now he's got Owens and he's got Chad, and you know, these guys are ready to play. He should be. You know, just giddy. Whatever bonuses he had in his contract, he should meet. If he doesn't meet them this year, you know, they need to rethink, you know, his whole role.
Yeah.
What?
You
know, yeah,
why
I
would you spend that kind of money on that receiving core if you aren't going to have a quarterback to get them the ball?
Yeah.
Well, as a
now, team, Mo, you've been in a couple of drafts. Who are some guys that you were targeting? Who are some guys that you were really after in the draft? You know, we know Breeze is one. You took him third in our draft. We get it. You think Drew Brees is going to have a hell of a year. Who are some other guys that you were targeting?
Who didn't you get?
Who what? What'd you say?
Who didn't you get? Who went a little earlier than you thought?
There were, I mean, obviously, you kind of, it depends on where you kind of drafted it. I think it's always harder to, I was actually drafted in much different spots in both of my drafts, so it's kind of interesting kind of how things, how you kind of play the draft coming from the front end versus the back end of the rounds, because I kind of got in. I was third pick in our draft, and I was like 10th or 11th in another draft of mine. So it's always interesting how things kind of play themselves out. And I was looking at some of those bigger names. Like I said, that's where I really kind of saw some value picks where you could get some guys later on where people probably didn't expect much from them this year, but I think they're going to have some pretty decent years. And the guys who you know, who've probably been down a little bit, you know, and some of the rookies as well. So I think it's kind of that, it's an interesting mix of guys who are all going to be some question marks. You get the rookies, they're going to be some question marks about whether how much of an impact they're going to have, which is always the case when you get into the fantasy situation. But then you're also going to have a lot of guys out there who are some veteran guys, like, say, you know, Hoosh Mazada, or you got your guy Sidney Rice up there in Minnesota and San Antonio, you know, and Braylon Edwards. Again, guys who are pretty, you know, pretty high picks, or at least had a lot of name recognition in the past. And what's going to exactly happen with them in terms of how they're going to, you know, finish their years out, or come out through the years fantasy-wise?
I mean, and I look at one, I kind of just put on, I mean, he's been battling injury, but in a league where you can have that flex spot, you know, someone like Brian Westbrook, when he was carrying the load, you know, his body was taking a beating. But, you know, matching him with a Gore, where you got a young quarterback, you got a guy who can catch out of the backfield, get some yards. He's not a guy who's gonna, Brian Westbrook could give you like 23 points some week. I mean, he could go off back in the day. But, you know, in a flex kind of situation, you know, in the role he's playing where his body might not, he might be able to give you, you know, 10 points in a flex position, because they're going to be using him on third down. You know, they're trying to bring Alex along, you know, something like that. You know, Larry Johnson, depending on what happens with Quentin Morris, you know, he's had some decent runs here in the preseason. You know, again, you know, you don't get him as a starter, but if he's a guy who can give you a spot start in the week, if something happens with Portis, you know, these are guys that are kind of like back to the future picks, right? Like, you know, they under the the multiple running back system actually plays to their advantage, because they're not wearing their body out as much, but they still can put that game together, which is, you know, kind of an interesting pick out there.
I look at Westbrook in San Francisco and Gore, you know, kind of like when Tiki and Jacobs were in the backfield together.
Yeah.
And what I would see was that Tiki would make some longer run touchdowns, because he knew if he got down to that goal line and he got down to third down, he was coming up. You know? Now Tiki, he running in from 15. He ain't running it in from 5, because he's coming out the field. You know? I see Gore doing the same thing. I see Gore looking over there. He's taking my bonus money. You know?
That was one of the guys, actually, in terms of a sleeper, Marcus, was Bradshaw. I thought he was a guy who, you know, it looks like he's going to kind of get the starters minutes early on, at least. And that's the guy I thought who probably was a good kind of sleeper kind of pick that I was looking at as one guy who probably is going to put some big numbers up this year. And I was hoping he might slip a little bit further than he did, but somebody picked him up earlier than I would expect it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I thought Bradshaw was going to, you know, I have him on a couple of other teams of mine, and I got him in the sixth round, which is, you know, I think he's going to produce first round numbers, and I think he's going to have a big year for New York. And you're going to see him transition into that lead back role there, and you could get him late. You know, you can get him real late. Another guy that I think may finally turn that corner is McFadden. You know, I think Darren McFadden, you know, it seems like Bush is dinged up, and I think the door is open for him to finally, you know, get that opportunity to show what he can do. I mean, remember, this is a dude who, when he came out of college, people were saying, was actually debating whether or not he was going to be a better back than Adrian Peterson.
Sure.
You know, and he hasn't played that well, one, because he's in Oakland, and it's hard to play well in Oakland. You know, and two, he's been dinged up. He hasn't played a full season, you know.
That's part of playing in Oakland, too. They don't have an offensive line. You're going to get dinged up. That's why Bush
ain't playing. Right. So, and I think this is the first year where Oakland seems like an actual NFL football team. You feel me? It finally looks like, you know, somebody has put something in Al Davis' drink, and, you know, he sleeps a lot of the day.
It's called metamucil.
As somebody his age should, you know, he's getting his rest, and somebody else is making the football decisions. So, you know, they finally figured that out. and it seems like they got some football players out there now. So I think this is going to be, you know, the first chance we really get to see what he can do in a structured setting where it ain't total chaos and tomfoolery, you know, as it has been before in Oakland.
My whole fantasy season this year really is going to be predicated on the young man up in Detroit. Because I stretched to get him in almost every draft I was in because
mm-hmm.
I went away from, you know, conventional wisdom, you know, not necessarily by choice, but when all these quarterbacks went away, you know, my whole draft was skewered, and it seemed to come down. Those second tier running backs just did not look good to me.
Right.
And so
right.
I went with his young behind, and I hate taking a rookie running back ever. But when they started talking about maybe not having any room on the roster for Smith, I thought they must just plan on running him to death.
Yeah.
So I took.
And when he's 22, you can do that.
Exactly. Exactly.
Another team I'm looking at is going to be interesting from a fantasy perspective and just from an offensive perspective is Kansas City. You know, when Weiss out there, Matt Castle, and thinking about Dwayne Bowe and Chambers and some of those guys out there, you know, one thing, I mean, Weiss struggled a little bit at Notre Dame, but one thing you know he can do, he's an offensive coordinator. And he knows how to move the ball, and he's worked with Castle. You know, from a fantasy standpoint, Castle, you know, could be, you know, I think, you know, a dark horse on this one. And also, you know, Dwayne Bowe and some of those guys, you know, depending on how the offense comes along, you know, in the passing game.
And I think the big sleeper on there is McCluster.
Yeah.
Because they just love him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the good thing about McCluster, and I don't know if y'all peeped this, but he's a running back and a wide receiver.
Exactly.
Yeah, I saw that.
You can play him in two different spots.
Yeah.
Right. You know.
And I looked at that and he's still undrafted in our league, you know, but
yeah.
I took him tonight in another league later.
Mm-hmm. I mean that's like for you, I mean you could possibly put four running backs out there with him. You know what I mean? You could have your two starters, you could have your one flex, and then you could play him at receiver.
But he almost needs an injury to get that full time and
right.
I think
now he's done it because he's behind Jones and he's behind Charles.
But
yeah.
but as a receiver, I think they got some holes, and he'll start it. He's probably going to start when they run those three receiver sets. So,
Thomas Jones could be like Bettis a few years ago.
Well,
you know, he might have 4-10 carries and 3 touchdowns.
Touchdown vulture.
I don't ever count him out. I mean, that's, if you look at the last 6 years, you know, Thomas Jones is one of the last running backs drafted. And one of the top 10 running backs every year. So, you know, he's an injury away from being a starter and being another top 10 back. So, and that's the NFL. If Charles goes down, you know, the only thing, nobody's scrambling to go to the waiver because he's picked up. Everybody realizes that Thomas Jones is a running back. And nobody's ever wanted him. They didn't want him, you know, in Chicago. They didn't want him in New York. You know, nobody's ever wanted him. But, every time he goes somewhere, he plays and he does well.
He produces, wherever he's at, he produces.
I think that you know the fantasy season, and the thing about it is everybody's going to shuffle their decks after this first the mistake that everyone makes. You know, somebody performs well their first week. The folks start dropping folks like flies. I love that.
I'm probably one of the few people that don't make any moves, and I've already relegated myself to being at the computer when the game is on. If somebody falls down, I'm picking somebody up. My computer just do not look good.
Hey, I done bought a laptop. You know, this is my first year with a laptop. I got this little Mac joint, man. I'm going to be sitting there watching the game on the computer. waiting on the injury.
You know somebody going to be talking about that up the league. It's like it's going to rule body. Got to wait till a certain time or something like that.
I got that iPhone, boy, because I can work it from anywhere. I'll 3D.
His brother was charging his iPhone at the draft, man.
Usually my teams are tight enough.
I'm in the kitchen charging his iPhone.
Every day, baby. I have a cheat sheet. That's it. I don't trust anybody. I might be in the car. I might have to just
I had
up at a light.
Got a little pencil sharpener.
I am not playing. You got to be on it with the folks we play. They right by the computer.
Exacto knife.
Yeah. Cats with no jobs. Cats with no jobs. Right by the computer.
I gotta ask. Now, this is the first year we stepped out. We and I don't want to give any undue advertisement to Hooters, but are we too old or too married to be at Hooters? Them girls are trying to talk to us, you know, engage in conversation, and you know, we wouldn't even talk to them.
It was like fourth grade all over again, man. I swear to God, it was like fourth grade all over again. We were like, ugh, yucky girl.
Did I say it to you, Marcus? I said that they didn't know what they do. Because they were like, used to guys probably, you know, all over them and flirting with them. And we were like, okay, well, that's nice, but we're busy right now.
You know, we could have held that draft at Denny's. It wouldn't have mattered. If Denny's would have served alcohol and some wings, we could have been at Denny's, wouldn't even know the difference.
Well,
hey, fellas, we got all kinds of people want to join on the show here tonight. Even the last 3 minutes, who we got here on the air who wants to join here? Hold on a second. Let me try and get this up. Who do we got here on the air with us? Real Sports
Hey,
guy.
Man. Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, who's this?
Yeah, man, this is Phil from the Bay. How you guys doing tonight?
All right, how you doing, man? Yeah.
That would be the San Francisco
We wanted to get
Bay.
You on here the last... Yeah. Talk to
hey, a couple things. Number one, I want to talk about this whole crap about, you know, them possibly taking Reggie Bush's Heisman Trophy away from him, which I think is crap. I mean, you know, I'm not necessarily a fan or otherwise, but, I mean, OJ didn't get his Heisman taken away, so why are we even discussing this? You guys agree, or am I just...
OJ was just in a low speed chase, though.
Not when he got the court. not when he got the court, he wasn't. So, why is this even a discussion point? And then the other point I want to talk about, you guys talked about, you know, we're talking about fantasy football and what have you. I joined fantasy football this year for the first time. My son kept getting on me about it, so I did. But in my, looking over, combing through statistics on teams and trends and what have you, I came up with something that's really interesting, and I wanted to put it out to you guys. Over the last 10 years, on average, 5 teams every year that didn't make the playoffs the year before end up making it the next year. And so I'm going to just give you the teams that didn't make the playoffs this year, or last year, I'm sorry, and I'd like you guys to comment yay or nay. So we'll start out with the Detroit Lions. Will they make the playoffs this year?
No.
Cleveland Browns?
No.
Kansas City Chiefs?
No.
St. Louis Rams?
No.
That's where you guys are wrong. History will tell you. History will tell you, if you look back on teams that won one game, if you look back to the 2008 Miami Dolphins, they finished 1-15. They made a change in coach, change in leadership at the top, and the biggest change was at the quarterback position, which in effect changed.
No. The biggest change was they got Ricky's ass back.
Well, that was part of the change, but I think the leadership positions offer more of an impact in terms of a cultural change. And so the next year, they ended up 11-5 and made the playoffs. So I'll let you guys discuss that, and I'll listen to you. Have a great evening, gentlemen.
Hey, and we're wrapping up. Join us again next week because we want to get to this conversation with you. So come back on it next week.
I will say before we close out, I will say Tennessee, they'll have a shot. They didn't make the playoffs last year. They'll have a shot. San Francisco didn't make the playoffs last year. They'll have a shot. Seattle will have a shot because they play in a weak division, and I think Arizona's going to fall back. So Seattle, San Francisco, and Tennessee, I think, have shots of teams that didn't make the playoffs last year. Those teams that you mentioned do not have a shot.
Well, there's two others out there that you haven't mentioned. So who could they be?
Yeah, I have to think about that. But those teams for sure, I know they have a shot. The other teams you were talking about, hell no.
we're closing out, but join us again next week so we can do this more in-depth conversation about this. It's a great topic. Catch us again next week at 10 o'clock Central Time. We want to cover this. Thanks for calling.
For sure, man. I'll be there.
We will cover this next week.
Yeah. All right. Here we go, y'all. See y'all next week. Thanks for the Real Sports Guys. We'll catch you on the other side. We're going to talk about the teams that will make the playoffs because we'll be able to talk about that first week of the NFL. And we'll see you next week. Thank you.